this morning.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The reality is Pam Bondi has obfuscated for months. She first said there were no more documents to be seen. Now she's admitting and releasing hundreds of thousands of documents, but it is an incomplete release with too many redactions. Thomas Massie and I are exploring all options. It can be the impeachment of people at justice, inherent contempt, or referring for prosecution those who are obstructing justice.
Outrage is growing after the Justice Department heavily redacted and withheld many documents related to convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein in possible violation of a new law signed by President Trump last month. We'll speak to Democratic California Congressmember Ro Khanna, who co-authored the Epstein Files Transparency Act. We'll also talk to him about Trump's threat to topple the Venezuelan government and more. Then to the occupied West Bank.
And we cannot lose sight of the rapidly deteriorating situation in the West Bank. Palestinians there face escalating Israeli settler violence, land seizures, demolitions, and intensified movement restrictions.
Despite warnings from the United Nations, Israel's approved 19 new settlements in the occupied West Bank. We'll go to Ramallah to speak with Budur Hassan of Amnesty International. Then we talk to the acclaimed climate scientist Michael Mann about the Trump administration's decision to dismantle NCAR. That's the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. military pursued two oil tankers near Venezuela over the weekend as it ramps up its pressure on Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. On Saturday, the U.S. Coast Guard intercepted and seized the Chinese-owned Panamanian-flagged vessel named Centuries that was not under U.S. sanctions. Meanwhile, the U.S. attempted to intercept another tanker called the Bella One, which was on its way to pick up oil in Venezuela. Earlier this month, the U.S. seized an oil tanker called the Skipper, with soldiers rappelling from helicopters and pointing weapons at sailors. It comes as President Donald Trump has declared a blockade of all sanctioned oil tankers entering and leaving Venezuela. Since September, the Trump administration's bombed at least 28 boats, allegedly transporting drugs in the Caribbean Sea and Pacific Ocean, though not presenting evidence, killing more than 100 people. On Sunday, Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky slammed the Trump administration's pressure campaign against Venezuela.
A provocation and a prelude to war, and I hope we don't go to war with Venezuela. Look, at any point in time, there are 20, 30 governments around the world that we don't like that are either socialist or communist or have human rights violations. We could really literally go through a couple dozen, but it isn't the job of the American soldier to be the policeman of the world. So I'm not for confiscating these liners. I'm not for blowing up these boats of unarmed people that are suspected of being drug dealers. I'm not for any of this.
President Trump announced he's appointing Republican Governor Jeff Landry of Louisiana to serve as the U.S. special envoy to Greenland. In response, Denmark's foreign minister Lars Rasmussen said Monday he'll summon the U.S. ambassador to Copenhagen. Landry thanked Trump on social media, saying, quote, "It's an honor to serve in this volunteer position to make Greenland a part of the U.S., unquote. President Trump has repeatedly called for the U.S. to take over Greenland using military force. The World Health Organization declared Gaza no longer faces famine following the ceasefire agreement of October 10th, but warns progress remains extremely fragile as Israel continues to severely restrict humanitarian operations, with Palestinians facing collapsed livelihoods and massive destruction to Gaza's infrastructure, including farmland. The WHO has warned more than 100,000 Palestinian children and 37,000 PBWs, that's pregnant and breastfeeding women, are projected to suffer acute malnutrition through next April. Meanwhile, Israel continues near daily violations of the ceasefire. On Saturday, Palestinians held a funeral for five people killed after Israel attacked a school sheltering displaced people in the Al-Tufa neighborhood of Gaza City.
We were inside the school, in a safe place. We were surprised with rockets and missiles falling over us. They hit the innocent civilians in an extreme massacre. Those were innocent civilians, children, women, elderly, and young people, three-year-old, five-year-old. They have nothing to do with any movement or anything.
In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed two Palestinians, including a child, during separate raids in Jenin governorate. Witnesses say 16-year-old Rayan Abdelkader was shot at close range by Israeli soldiers who blocked medics from reaching him, leading the boy to bleed out. His body was then seized by Israeli forces. Meanwhile, Israel's security cabinet has approved 19 new Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank in its latest breach of international law. It brings the number of new settlements approved by Israel over the last 3 years to 69. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast when we go to Ramallah. The U.S. military launched strikes against ISIS targets in Syria on Friday following the killing of two American soldiers and their interpreter earlier this month. A U.S. military official told The Wall Street Journal that over 70 targets were struck by U.S. warplanes using more than 100 precision-guided munitions. It's the largest American assault against ISIS in Syria since the fall of Bashar al-Assad's regime last year. In southern Ukraine, a Russian missile strike Saturday targeted port infrastructure in the Black Sea city of Odessa, killing eight people and wounding 27 others. The attack came as Russia's military claimed control over two more villages in the Donetsk and Sumy regions of Ukraine. In Moscow, a senior Russian general died Monday morning in a car bomb explosion outside a block of apartment buildings. Lieutenant General Fanil Sarvarov led the Russian military's operational training department. His assassination comes a year after Ukraine claimed responsibility for blowing up the head of Russia's nuclear, biological and chemical weapons defense forces. In Miami, Florida, President Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, praised talks aimed at ending Russia's war in Ukraine as productive and constructive after separate meetings with Ukrainian, European and Russian negotiators over the weekend. President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, also joined the talks, which showed no obvious signs of a breakthrough. Reuters reports U.S. intelligence assessments continue to warn that Russian President Vladimir Putin has not abandoned his aims of capturing all of Ukraine and expanding Russia's influence over former Soviet bloc states. The Justice Department is under fire over its initial release of files related to the serial sex offender Jeffrey Epstein after it failed to publish thousands of documents ahead of last Friday's congressionally imposed deadline. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche said the delay was due to the time it takes to carefully redact the names of Epstein's victims from hundreds of thousands of documents and said the missing documents would eventually be made public on a rolling basis. The delay drew criticism from Epstein's survivors and members of Congress. On Sunday, California Democrat Ro Khanna and Kentucky Republican Thomas Massie, who co-sponsored the Epstein Files Transparency Act, said they'll seek to hold Attorney General Pam Bondi in contempt of Congress. Some Democrats said they're considering filing articles of impeachment against Bondi. Of the pages turned over so far, more than 500 were entirely redacted, including all 119 pages of a document labeled Grand Jury New York. Meanwhile, at least 16 files disappeared from the Justice Department's public web page over the weekend before reappearing amidst a public outcry. The files included images of paintings depicting nude women and one showing a photograph of Trump alongside Epstein, Melania Trump, and Epstein's longtime associate and co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell. This is Sky Roberts, the brother of Epstein survivor Virginia Giuffre, whose death last April was ruled a suicide.
You know, to be honest, in reviewing the documents that have been released, at least the first gauge and what we understand is that it's about 10%. Mm-hmm. And so you look at it and you say, well, I thought we asked for all the documents. Mm-hmm. I thought that this bill sort of alluded to the fact that we should be getting everything released. And so there's also this mixed feeling of what are we hiding here?
After headlines, we'll speak with Congressmember Ro Khanna of California, who co-sponsored the Epstein Files Transparency Act. Republican Congressmember Lee Stefanik of New York, a staunch ally of President Trump, announced she's dropping out of the New York governor's race and giving up her seat in Congress next year. Stefanik is the latest high-profile Republican to announce her departure from Congress after Republican Congressmember Marjorie Taylor Greene announced she's leaving in January. It comes as Republican Senator Cynthia Lummis of Wyoming also announced she would not seek re-election after serving one term. CBS News abruptly canceled a segment from Sunday's episode of 60 Minutes featuring the stories of Venezuelan men deported by the Trump administration to El Salvador's notorious Sicat prison. CBS pulled the segment 3 hours before the broadcast after Barry Weiss, the new editor-in-chief of CBS News, requested multiple changes to the segment. CBS correspondent Sharon Alfonsi, who reported the segment, said in an internal note, quote, "Our story was screened 5 times and cleared by both CBS attorneys and standards and practices. It's factually correct. In my view, pulling it now, after every rigorous internal check has been met, is not an editorial decision. It's a political one," she said. The American Civil Liberties Union is sounding the alarm about the deaths of immigrants in ICE custody. Just this month, according to ICE press releases, 4 people in immigration detention have died over a 4-day period. In 2025, 30 people died in ICE custody, the highest number since 2004. Eunice Cho, senior counsel at the ACLU Prison Project, said, quote, "There's no question in my mind that this represents a clear deterioration of medical care and the worsening conditions in ICE detention." In Pakistan, a court has sentenced former Prime Minister Imran Khan and his wife Bushra Bibi to 17 years in prison after they were found guilty of retaining and selling state gifts. Khan was removed from power when he lost a no-confidence vote in 2022 and was then imprisoned in 2023 in a separate corruption case. He's long accused Pakistani authorities of politically persecuting him as part of a U.S.-backed conspiracy. In Bangladesh, tens of thousands of mourners gathered Saturday at the state funeral for Sharif Osman Hadi, a leader of last year's student-led uprising that toppled longtime Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina. Hadi was shot in the head by masked gunmen in Dhaka last week as he was preparing to announce plans to run as an independent candidate in national elections next February. Protesters at his funeral demanded justice.
The feeling is so sad because still we don't know who killed our brother. We don't know what's going on coming days. And we are not in hope that justice will be ensured in our country. So we think we have to fight long. We have to fight more and more.
Authorities have identified a suspect in Hadi's killing. Faisal Karim Massoud was a member of a now-banned student wing of the ousted Awami League, the party of former Prime Minister Hasina. He remains at large. In Sydney, Australia, thousands of mourners held a moment of silence Sunday evening to mark 1 week since a father and son opened fire on a Jewish festival marking the first day of Hanukkah, killing 15 people and leaving dozens of others injured. This comes as Australian police say the attackers threw homemade bombs at a crowd at Bondi Beach before the mass shooting, but all four devices failed to detonate. Some members of the crowd on Sunday booed Prime Minister Anthony Albanese as he arrived at the commemoration and again when his name was mentioned in a speech. Jewish leaders have called for a federal royal commission to investigate the Bondi Beach massacre, something Albanese has resisted. He's instead backing a state-level royal commission. Mourners also cheer the heroism of Ahmed Al-Ahmed, a bystander who was wounded after wrestling a gun from one of the Bondi Beach attackers. This is David Ossip, the president of the New South Wales Board of Jewish Deputies.
And friends, Ahmed has asked me to pass on the following message to us all. Quote, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. Today, I stand with you, my brothers and sisters. Thank you, Ahmed."
In the wake of the shooting, lawmakers in the New South Wales State Parliament are debating an emergency set of laws to tighten gun laws. The legislation is expected to pass the upper house Tuesday. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Justice Department is under fire over its initial release of files related to the serial convicted child sex offender Jeffrey Epstein after it failed to publish thousands of documents by Friday's congressionally imposed deadline. The delay drew criticism from Epstein's survivors and members of Congress. Of the Epstein files turned over so far, more than 500 pages were entirely redacted, including all 119 pages of a document labeled Grand Jury NY. One notable document released Friday was a 1996 FBI complaint filed by Maria Farmer, who, along with her sister Annie, was sexually abused by Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, who's serving a 20-year sentence. In the report, Maria Farmer told the FBI of Epstein's interest in child pornography. For more than 30 years, the FBI never publicly acknowledged her report, never investigated her claims. On Friday, Maria's sister Annie spoke to CNN.
My sister Maria Farmer reported Epstein and his crimes in 1996. We've been saying that over and over again. And part of what was released today was an official FBI form, and I think it was an FD-71, dated September 3rd, 1996. With my sister's, some of my sister's report, it was labeled under child pornography, and it described Epstein stealing photos of myself at the age of 16, of my younger sister, who was 12 at the time. And just to see it in writing and to know that they had this document this entire time. And how many people were harmed after that date? It just, you know, we've been saying it over and over, but to see it in black and white that way, has been very emotional. I'm with Maria today. I know she felt a tremendous amount of relief and redemption, but also sorrow in thinking about, you know, people like Virginia Roberts Giuffre, who are not here to see this and be a part of really forcing the government to be transparent finally about this case.
That was Annie Farmer speaking to CNN. At least 16 files related to Jeffrey Epstein disappeared from the Justice Department's public webpage over the weekend before reappearing amidst public outcry. The files included images of paintings depicting nude women and one showing a photograph of Trump alongside Epstein, Melania Trump, and Epstein's longtime associate and co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell. We're joined right now in studio for the first time by Democratic Congressmember Ro Khanna of California, along with Republican Congressmember Thomas Massie. Ro Khanna co-wrote the Epstein Files Transparency Act, which led to Friday's release. So the deadline, Congressmember Khanna, was December 19th. So talk about what was released and what wasn't released.
Not much new was released. Unfortunately, what they released was heavily redacted. They didn't release some of the key documents. The 60-count draft indictment that was prepared for Jeffrey Epstein. Ultimately, he was charged only on two counts. We had asked for that 60-count draft indictment.
This was the original one, the non-prosecution agreement.
The original indictment of what he should have been charged for.
In Florida.
And then the 82-page memorandum trying to justify that. They didn't release that. So Massey and I yesterday morning said we were going to hold Pam Bondi in contempt. Since then, for 24 hours, they've been backpedaling. They actually now have released an unredacted version of the New York grand jury testimony, the 119-page document that you referred. They're saying they're going to release more documents. They realize the public backlash. So let's see what we get this week.
So you've talked about possibly holding the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, in contempt. It's also been floated that you might want to impeach her. What does each of these mean, and what's the deadline on each of these?
So the House can act unilaterally on contempt, and this will be introduced by Thomas Massie. What the resolution will say is that for every day that Pam Bondi does not release the documents in question, she will be subject to a personal $5,000 fine. And there will be a committee of the Congress, Republican and Democrat, that need to see the documents to determine whether that redaction qualifies as legitimate with the statute or not. We will be giving her a 30-day grace period to release the documents. But the interesting thing is that Massey has Republicans lined up as well to support this contempt. It's a privileged resolution. That means the Speaker would have to give it a vote. And we're likely to introduce it early in January. But the point is not just to pass it, just the announcement of doing so. And Pam Bondi's awareness that Republicans are upset has had them backpedaling. And all day yesterday, they've been tweeting out unredacted versions of previously redacted documents, explanations for why documents have been missing, and a commitment to be releasing more documents.
So you're talking about contempt, and you're saying only the House would have to approve that, not the Senate. And what about impeachment?
Impeachment requires the Senate to convict. It would require a majority in the House. It's an option on the table. I think what she's doing is impeachable. But we would want to first do the contempt, and we would want to make sure that we have the votes to be able to impeach. But what is on the table is the contempt, impeachment, and frankly, a criminal referral in terms of obstruction of justice for violating the law, which would apply not just to her or Deputy Attorney General Blanche, but career prosecutors or Justice Department officials who have not complied with the letter of the law or the spirit of the law.
So you mentioned Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche. He appeared on Meet the Press on Sunday and was asked by Kristen Welker about files relating to President Trump.
Let's delve more deeply into the redactions. Is any information about President Trump redacted in any of the files that have or will be released?
No, not unless it's supposed to be redacted under the law, which means victim information or any sort of privilege, like attorney-client privilege. But I have no reason to believe that the lawyers that were working on this case were talking about President Trump, because he had nothing to do with the Epstein files. He had nothing to do with the horrific crimes that Mr. Epstein committed. And so I don't expect there will be anything redacted. But the short answer is we are not redacting information around President Trump, around any other individual involved with Mr. Epstein.
So that's the Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, yes, the former personal attorney of the criminal attorney for President Trump. If you can talk about, for example, this photograph that was on the website, disappeared from the website, and then came back on, and Blanche talking about, well, they want to just protect survivors. It was a picture of Trump. Explain the significance of this. It wasn't even particularly incriminating, and yet they removed it.
Well, it was not incriminating because that picture had actually been out in the public domain before. What I can just think is that there were overzealous attorneys who were told or decided that they didn't want anything with Trump out there. And so they were vetting the material to protect Trump. And then the outrage made them re-release it. But the biggest issues is that in one case, they released information about a survivor. Maybe they did that accidentally, but they didn't release the survivor's FBI file, which she has been asking for decades. And the truth is, what do the American people want to know? They want to know who are the rich and powerful men who went to Epstein's rape island? Who are the people who either abused these young girls or watched at parties as young girls, 14, 15, were paraded around naked and didn't say anything? And that information is in the FBI files. That information is in those indictments and in the prosecution memorandum. And the question people are asking is, why are you not releasing this? Because it goes beyond Trump. It goes to a group of rich and powerful people who are engaged in heinous conduct or covering it up.
So the Democrats have also been in charge of the House when they didn't release the Epstein files. Why the change?
Well, I think it was a miss for this whole country. I don't defend the idea that these survivors have been denied justice for over a decade. Now, Elijah Cummings had talked about this in 2019. I was on the committee. We had talked about having an investigation. But all of us should have acted with far greater urgency. And as I have gotten to know now personally the survivors, I have become much more emotionally invested in this case, meeting people like Annie Farmer. And what happened to these young girls, because they were girls from working class families who came, were often immigrants or didn't have a father. They were abused and this country abandoned them. And that's a shame and an indictment on the country.
This is Amanda Roberts, the sister-in-law of the late Virginia Giuffre, who was the first survivor to come out publicly against Epstein.
I think the law being passed is exactly why we wanted it to be passed, because now we can hold them accountable because this is a law now, and we can hold them in contempt if they do decide to, you know, redact perpetrators, if they don't release the items that we know they need to release. And so we're going to do our due diligence, you know, between us, the survivors, the lawyers. We know what should be in there, and we're going to comb through every single page, and we're going to hold them accountable. And so while we're extremely disappointed, while we're frustrated, there is also this sense of empowerment. And every single survivor that I told them today, I said, the ball is in our court.
See, that's Amanda Roberts, the sister-in-law of the late Virginia Roberts Giuffre, who was a victim of Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, and, of course, Andrew. We don't say Prince Andrew anymore, because after all of this, and she sued him, he's been stripped of his royal title. So many survivors have said it shouldn't be on them, though they have united. They're not giving up. They've talked about putting out a list of the men whose names they knew.
They have. They came to the Capitol twice. They relived their trauma twice. That's the only reason Massey and my bill passed the House and the Senate. And they have said that they are many men who either abused them, raped them, trafficked them, or covered it up. I mean, Amy, think about it. There are 1,200 victims. It's not conceivable mathematically that one person abused or raped 1,200 people. There were more folks. They have described them in generalities to Massey and me. They fear, obviously, defamation suits and rich and powerful people coming after them. It shouldn't be their obligation to release this. What they and their lawyers have said is, if you release the FBI files, if you release the draft indictments and the prosecution memo, the American people will know who these folks are.
Susan Wiles, in this famous now Vanity Fair article, in talking about this, I think she used the term, she said, Chris Whipple wrote the article, I think she, Wiley said, I think she completely, referring to Pam Bondi, whiffed on appreciating that that was the very targeted group that cared about this, Wiles said of Bondi.
Well, she whiffed, and she's continuing to whiff. I mean, I imagine the White House was livid on Friday, because what Pam Bondi did on Friday was basically a extension of what she did 5 months ago, put out documents and a document dump that really didn't tell us anything new. And I think they thought that we're headed to Christmas, Congress is out of session, Massey and I would just sort of say, okay, they complied with the law and let's move on and declare a win. Instead, they were surprised that Massey and I actually care about these survivors. We don't just care about some kind of a pro forma win. We want the actual documents out. And within hours, we said this is a betrayal, a gross betrayal of the spirit and letter of the law.
I have a question. Ghislaine Maxwell, in the days leading up to December 19th, the convicted associate of sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, has asked a federal court to vacate or amend her 20-year sentence for sex trafficking. Now, this isn't the same as a pardon. I was wondering if by doing this, I'm not saying she's working in cahoots with the administration, but by doing this, does this open up the possibility that they'll say, well, since she's asked the federal court to vacate or amend her sentence, they're reopening the case, and this would lead to many documents not being released?
It could be one of the reasons that they don't release some of the documents. But to put in context, there are 300 gigabytes of documents. They've released 2.